you got it dialed in. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And it's so good to be with you once again as we explore an exciting world, the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. Today in the first half hour, we have Tom Levesque. You might remember him from Nano Inc. talking about the Nano Professor. Well, Tom has some exciting things to tell us. The country of Colombia is educating its slum children in the uses of nanotechnology, a really remarkable story. You're going to really find that very riveting. And in the second half hour, we have Deb Newberry, famous for her book, The Next Big Thing is Really Small. A year ago, Deb was trained in the use of the Nano Professor, the same one that's used right now in Colombia. And then she was among the first, or the first, to bring it into her university, Dakota College, up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we have her on the program telling us how it's all working out for her. And really some great information. And we'll visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of. Visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. And we're going to ask the spirit of the fountain the science question, what's circled by Titan, Phobe, and Pan? And if you think you know the answer to that question, you might stick around and see if you're correct. And of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. People tell us that's their favorite part of the show. Before today's guest, we want to check into our busy newsroom for some science news headlines. Okay, it says here that on May 19th, Dr. Stephen Coonan, Undersecretary of Science at the U.S. Department of Energy, will be making a very interesting presentation at UT Dallas on splitting molecules to harvest hydrogen. And it seems that Stellar Biotechnologies has appointed Andrew Saxon chairman. Saxon is a world-renowned expert on human cellular and molecular immunology, and you might remember Dr. Saxon. He and his colleagues were at UCLA way back in 1980, were the first to recognize AIDS. And this is interesting. Canada has brushed aside a direct public demand by the visiting United Nations chief and said that it will not make climate change a priority agenda item when it hosts the G20 summit next month. Okay, today, once again, we're going to talk about nanotechnology. And we have with us Tom Levesque. He's the general manager for the Americas of Nano Inc. And you might remember Nano Inc. if you listen to this show regularly. Nano Inc. Deals in dip pen nanolithography. And if you need a refresher course on that, listen to some of the previous shows that we've done. But it's a way of using an atomic force microscope to really drill down and see things at the molecular level. Anyway, welcome to the program, Tom. We're so glad to have you.
Well, I'm very happy to be here, Colonel. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Now then, things are going on with the National Nanotechnology Initiative that I want you to bring us up to date with a little bit and tell us where we are in this country right at the moment with the concerning education and that initiative. What's the picture?
Well, the National Nanotechnology Initiative is kind of the overreaching bundled control of the efforts of the U.S. government to invest in nanotechnology. And this is the initiative that was started 10 years ago with a $500 million per year investment and has grown to include over the entire program now something like $12 billion worth of investment by the U.S. federal government. The budget for next year is $1.6 billion, and it grows to $1.8 billion. And this program had its third assessment or review just released in March of this year. And they generally give the program good grades. The U.S. maintains a good commanding position in nanotechnology investment from the private sector. No matter how you measure this, whether you look at the number of patents that are generated, we still are in pretty good shape. But there is some strong competition from other companies, other countries, and their collective investments and numbers of patents filed is growing. The numbers of publications that people are doing in the literature is growing, and in fact have surpassed the U.S. in total number of publications in the year 2008.
Mm.
But overall, they have come up with a number of recommendations on how to course correct the program and fine-tune it. And in some of those areas, the areas of nanomanufacturing and the areas of education, Nano Inc. is pleased to see these efforts and is participating from our part to promote the technology and the ability to manufacture. And the whole program about having the ability to make things with this technology is where the commercialization and realization of the potentials will take place.
Now, I believe the National Science Foundation a couple of years ago was saying that we need some phenomenal number of nanotechnology workers by the year 2015. Now, as I understand, the NNI is claiming a million workers in 5 years. What's the picture of that?
Well, they're holding to those numbers. It's we currently have only maybe 20,000 trained nanotechnologists in the world, and these people are primarily the results of high-level research level one institutions like UT and Northwestern, where people go and get PhDs or postdoctoral work done, and they come out and they have all of this experience, and they are the nanotechnology workforce. Now, the thing that's missing from that is those are the senior workers that would direct a technical workforce, and there are no technicians there, because the only way to obtain these kind of educations in the past was to go through these very sophisticated programs at high-level institutions and use some very expensive equipment to get there. The new procedures that companies like Nano Inc. are doing are less expensive manufacturing tools that are desktop-based rather than clean room-based. And we're bringing this capability to a new level of workers, and we can actually train more workers now because we don't require that expensive infrastructure that has been the limiting factor in the past.
So you're talking about cottage industries with nanotechnology?
Yeah, it's actually an interesting analogy. One of my users at Texas A&M, Dr. Deb Banerjee, coined this phrase in some work that we were doing, where he says it's a lot like the original automobile industry, where there were many manufacturers of cars, and that in the future, using desktop nanofabrication, it would be possible for individuals in a very small environment to custom make nanotechnology-based products. So it does have some parallels to the development of early industry in this country in automotive.
Now, your organization, what do you have, 75 employees now, and how does that break down, and are you looking for more people trained in nanotechnology, or where do you see that going?
Well, Nano Inc. is currently about 75 people. One-third of our employees have a PhD. Another third have a master's degree, and almost all of those are from these Research 1 level institutions that I mentioned. And we have people with these degrees that do jobs like sales engineers or service engineers or application engineers, and frankly, the degree is the only way we can find people currently trained to do these jobs, but the degree is maybe not necessary. And I think if you extend this technology to a company like an IBM or an Abbott or Merck, and you say we're going to have many nanotechnology workers, their business model probably doesn't support having hundreds and perhaps thousands of these highly educated workers, rather than a technically trained workforce, as you might think about in the current semiconductor business and the other medical and biomedical businesses. So there is a need to train these other workers, this technician-level workforce, and that's one of the things that Nano Inc. has exhibited firsthand, I think.
Yeah, well, you said all growth is limited by the availability of the trained workforce, and you have the Nano Professor Program, which we've talked about on this program on several occasions. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to want to get back in touch with Deb Newberry to find out how she's doing it, because I understand she has it in place at Dakota College up there in Minneapolis. Have you gotten any reports from her lately?
Yes, she is. She's actually. I'll allow her to tell her story when you talk to her. But she's training with the Nano Professor. She's integrated into her technician in nanotechnology program at DCTC, and she will be finishing up this first semester. So she'll be ripe for talking to you about her experiences.
I understand, though, that other countries are doing a lot in training their workforce in nanotechnology. And you recently were in South America someplace. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to tell you. I have to admit that when we developed the Nano Professor Program, I thought it would be predominantly in the United States that we would see the interest in this. And mm-hmm. we've seen strong interest in the U.S. I assumed that the international interest would take place in the program, but it would follow. In reality, it's virtually in parallel, because the other countries, there are a number of smaller countries who have looked at investing in technology and training of their workforce, mm-hmm. and they've seen that it is probably more expedient for them to purchase a program rather than develop a program. So, for example, in the country of Colombia in South America, mm-hmm. I was surprised when they approached us after a contact at a trade show, where we talked to some people from Bergen County Academy in New Jersey who had contacts in Colombia. The contacts in Colombia were at a fairly high level. It was with the director of a organization in Colombia called SENA, S-E-N-A, mm-hmm. which is actually the National Training Service. It is a government sponsored organization with many schools across the country that invest in the social and technical developments of Colombian workers. SENA had a very strong interest. The director is a gentleman by the name of Dario Montoya, mm-hmm. And he is personally connected to the president of Colombia, Alvaro Uribe, who has made a commitment to improve the technical training of the workforce, and very much the disadvantaged individuals in Colombia, and provide them training to improve their lives. So this took place very quickly. Mm-hmm. We had interest in a system. They purchased an initial system, and then they went on to purchase three more systems. So there are now four Nano Professor systems up and being installed and beginning to be implemented into the SENA curriculum for training young people.
And I have to ask you, training these young people for the purpose of employing them in Colombia's nanotechnology initiatives, or so that they can come to the United States where there's going to be demand for nanotechnology workers, or what's the rationale here?
I believe the rationale is to keep them in the country and to give them an advantage. These people seem to have a vision that the presence of a trained workforce will support local investments in whether they're cottage industries or whether they are major companies that already exist, employing nanotechnology to make new products that have enhanced capabilities. I was there in Colombia just a few weeks ago, and I was struck by the implementation of this vision. In Colombia, in Bogota, the individuals there are a great number of individuals. This is a city of 8 million people now. Mm-hmm. There are a great number of individuals around the outskirts of the city that live in abject poverty. And the institution that I visited was a brand new facility that had 350 teenage students in it. These were 14 and 15 year old kids.
Oh, really?
Who were being given an opportunity to work on equipment, or with equipment that was state of the art, including scanning electron microscopes, mm-hmm. including the nanoprofessor, including engineering CAD systems and robotics systems and making robots, and the sparkle in these kids' eyes as they were doing this was vibrant. The setting is such that these children come down from the virtual slums behind the school.
Really?
They go through the school, these programs, and they emerge out of the front of the building into society with a education that is probably not even available at some of the best private schools in Bogota.
That's amazing.
It was an image that struck me and has been with me for a month, and I see it virtually every day in my mind. The investment that the government has made in to improve the lives and the economic conditions of the people in the city, it was very striking.
Well, this has got to be quite a visage. I mean, here you are in this apparently a pretty modern school, and you have this very modern equipment, atomic force microscopes, and this curriculum of the nano professor teaching people about nanotechnology. And from the slums of the hills above, these disadvantaged children in their early teens coming into what would have to be a completely different and new world to these people. These kids, you say they have a gleam in their eye that makes it sound like they really understand what they're doing?
They do, and the managers of this particular school were telling me that they selected these students not based purely on their intelligence performance or their needs or financial status. They picked them based on individuals' attitudes, which students showed the most promise for being able to benefit from this opportunity. And I think that's that was an interesting way to select from the available, and I'm sure the lines waiting to go through this program are extremely long, but they are the kids in the program that I saw all were wearing school uniforms. They were all interacting with their tools and in small groups with their instructors, and they had a glow. That's all I can say.
Well, this had to be really, really impressive and sensational. Of course, Colombia is probably the only friend that the United States has in South America. So, you know, it makes one wonder with this initiative that they're going through. They're going to educate these kids. You say they're going to stay in Colombia. Did anybody in Colombia impart to you what they thought might be the future of Colombia in the field of nanotechnology? What do they want to do? They want to be the outstanding leader of nanotechnology in South America? Is that it?
They could move rapidly into that position because nanotechnology is not particularly well established across the continent. And there, it does lend itself to these kind of cottage industries and support. I've also been talking to people in Mexico, in particular in the area around Monterrey. There's a very strong engineering school at Tech de Monterrey.
Mm-hmm.
And the people in Mexico are trying to build up an investment of something like $500 million over the next several years to support a nanotechnology workforce and then develop the industries around it. It's a chicken and an egg thing. You can't have an industry without a workforce, but you also can't support a workforce unless there's industry there to employ them. So it does take people with vision who are willing to invest to begin to build an infrastructure to then create the industries there.
Well, if it's really true that this could be a cottage industry, a desktop industry with nanotechnology, then one would suppose that people working in the field of nanotechnology in Colombia or in Monterrey, Mexico, or some other backwater of the world, that they could actually be doing work for the progressive countries in the United States through the World Wide Web. Is that where things are going?
Well, I don't know how much of this will be supported through the Internet. I do know that there will be opportunities for countries, for example, like China, to establish themselves positions in low-cost manufacturing of advanced materials. It supports their current business model of being low labor, but having enhanced quality and capabilities in materials that can be made in low labor environments. And I think many of these countries that have available labor but need to train the labor, if it can be done in a way that doesn't require the exorbitant education that it has in the past, it will allow them to capitalize on their commodity labor.
Well, that might answer the question of where the million workers are going to come from in 5 years in the field of nanotechnology. If countries around the world and the third world countries, I shouldn't use that term, I suppose they kind of resent it, the developing countries, developing is the word now, are training people in nanotechnology, that might answer the question. Is that what we're looking at?
Well, I think we are. And I think the success that SENA is having in Colombia, they've already had visits from neighbors in educators in both Brazil and Venezuela. I know there are others scheduled to visit as well to come see this program. So there's a great deal of interest in technology as a means to improve the future education as well as the commercial prospects for the labor force.
Maybe someday Hugo Chavez might even wake up, I suppose.
I wouldn't go that far.
too much to hope for, I guess. Okay. Well, getting back to this country again, is this an indication that we're not putting the emphasis on training in the fields of science and especially nanotechnology as the other countries are? Are we falling behind?
Well, I don't know if it's correct to say we're falling behind. Our investment still is greater than most of these other countries. And it's a question of what kind of students and workers we are training. And as I said, if you look at the sheer numbers of advanced degrees that are given out, the United States has a huge lead over other countries. Mm-hmm. Although we are educating many foreign students and then due to our immigration policy, putting them in a position where they have to leave the country and go back to their country. So we're educating and exporting high-level trained individuals, which may not be a sustainable policy for us. And that is pointed out also in the assessment of the National Nanotechnology Initiative. But in this country, we have begun to realize also that the technicians need to be there for the jobs. And there are a number of programs like the one at DCTC, and there are some at Penn State. There's a new one coming online at College of the Canyons in California. So people are starting to realize, and there's a great deal of interest and effort being put into it. For example, the Obama proposal for the American Graduation Initiative was going to invest $12 billion over the next 10 years in educating at community college level. And that is the kind of place we see nanoprofessors, a great deal of interest for nanoprofessors, in training these students who are not going to have a bachelor's degree, perhaps. We also see some efforts in Congress. There are a number of bills in both houses that are being proposed to support the nanotechnology education of the country. So I wouldn't say that we're falling behind. I would say that we're aware that we need to continue to invest, and there are some people who are working on putting the infrastructure together and continuing to expand the existing infrastructure to do this.
Well, Tom Levesque, the general manager in the Americas for Nano Inc., and talking about the nano professor and some other very pressing issues on educating our youth in the fields of nanotechnology. Thank you so much for being with us. I know you have a lot more to say about this, and we'll look forward to that. Next half hour, though, we have Deb Newberry, and she's going to talk about her experiences with the nano professor at her college, Dakota College in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Out of the shadows from many centuries past, Seneca. Oh, you probably want it in English. No man was ever wise by chance.